we volunteered to take part in a competition. They gave us a giant bowl of whipped cream, and it had these little, they call them merits. It's like things you earn at camp for doing good deeds. And there was like four or five merits buried in this giant bowl of whipped cream. And you had to dig out the merits with nothing but your face. And so me and our son volunteered to do this. And like our hands went up right away. And we got called up there and we ended up winning the competition. But when I got done, you said to me, it's going to be hard to say without crying. You said, I think I just fell more in love with you. That was really cool. And it took me a second. I'm like, why? Because I won the whipped cream competition? Because I flexed on the other dad, you know? But then like that, you know, just millisecond of a thought, I was like, oh, it's because I'm present with my family and I'm doing the things that we always dream we do. And we're actually doing them right now. Welcome back. Welcome back to another episode of Till the Wheels Fall Off. I'm Matt.
I'm Paige.
And today we're talking about the growth that comes with 4,000 days of sobriety.
Congratulations, boo.
To us, not just to me, but to us.
It is our story, but I'm still very proud of you. That is really awesome.
I'm going to, thank you, first of all.
But you're welcome.
we're going to celebrate 11 years on the 13th of April, God yes. willing. Mm-hmm. But I think that 4,000 days sounds cooler than 11 years.
But yeah, I mean, number four, that's my favorite number.
So it's got significance.
Yes.
4,000 days, including nights and weekends and holidays.
Yes, very good. Good job.
4,000 days. They say it takes 10,000 hours to become an expert at something. I've done this. This is like 95,000 and some odd hours.
Dang.
So expert almost 10 times over.
That's impressive.
But the thing about this deal is you're never really an expert. And we're going to talk about some of that.
Yeah.
Learn something new every single day.
For sure.
Before we get started, though, let's talk about the course.
Yes.
Our mini course is still available. It's an intro to our larger course. If you've been listening for a while, you know that we built this course that's designed to help spouses and partners of addicts and alcoholics on their own recovery journey. It sort of outlines a path, gives you guardrails to operate in, and is designed to empower you, mm-hmm. also validate and educate you, and walk you on your own recovery path. There's a mini version of this thing available. So if you're not ready to make the financial commitment, if you're not sure if this is something that's right for me, there's an introduction to it. It's a relationship evaluation portion of the larger course, and it's available for a limited time for $50 on our website or on independentlystrong.com.
Yeah, we should have it up just to the end of March.
Till the end of March, so not mm-hmm. much longer.
Yep.
Not much longer. It'll be up
a few more days.
For a few more days.
Yeah.
So get it while you can. Larger course is still out there. And with that course, you also get office hours for us. Mm-hmm. Office hours implies us, not just nonsense. We're not giving you our cell phone numbers to just text and call anytime. I would like to do that. We just never sleep. But I love helping people. I know you love helping people. But when you get the course, you get office hours for us. So as you're working through it and you got a situation that's going on, you'd like some feedback or some clarity on one of the concepts you're working through. Hey, how's this apply to my life that now that this is going on, you're going to get a thoughtful response in return. Mm-hmm. We are not medical professionals. We don't provide medical advice. We are not licensed therapists, but we've been there, done that. We have walked through this journey together. We're more than happy to help walk you through it as well.
Yes.
We've been doing this for almost 100,000 hours. We know we're doing it too at this point.
That's
it's
true.
Safe to say.
Yes, so you can go to tufo.com for that or independentlystrong.com.
Either of those navigate you over to the site where you can buy this stuff. Mm-hmm. Our merch, we've still got a few more sweatshirts available if you're interested. If you want a nice, comfy, oversized sweatshirt, we've got them over at tufo.com. Yeah, we have black left. It's just yellow. I think we've got all three.
We have all three colors. Are just the, we only have, I don't know, maybe three of
handful
each.
Handful of each.
Yeah.
Yeah. So get them while you can. They won't be around much
and
longer.
Stickers.
Stickers are still up there. Paige has adorned her new water bottle with...
If you're watching us, I got a new water bottle. And I'm going to miss my other one because it had all the cool stickers on there, like the weird Barbie. But I get to collect new ones now, and I'm excited about that.
That water bottle looked dope, but it leaked everywhere. And it's been leaking for quite some time.
I might still pull it out sometimes. I love that freaking water bottle. But anyway, I added some of our stickers to this one. So.
Yeah. Also coaching, something that we don't talk about a lot, but we're going to just for a moment because we get questioned about it all the time. Do we do coaching, mentorship? Yes, we do. If you're interested, hop over to tufo.com. We've got email coaching, one-on-ones available, relationship, mentorship. We can show you what we did to get to where we are today. The next thing kind of sets the stage for the episode. Mm-hmm. So if you're a regular listener, you might remember for our 23rd anniversary this year, I wasn't here. We weren't together for the first time in 23 years mm-hmm. because I was out in LA doing something and we couldn't talk about it at the time. But now that the I guess it's a campaign is out, we can discuss it a little bit.
Yes.
So I partnered with Aleve, which is a Bayer company, to talk about opioid abuse awareness. Something that is very near and dear to both of our hearts, because that's the reason that we have this podcast. I mean, ultimately, that's what got us here. So I was given this really cool opportunity to talk to people. There was four people that we interviewed. They didn't know that they were talking. They didn't know if they were talking to a doctor or like a pharmacist or what, right? They just, we appeared on a video call. They were being told they were talking to an expert and they didn't tell them what kind of expert. So I asked them questions about their pain. I asked them questions about how they've treated it in the past, if they would consider opioids. And then we start talking about some of the side effects of opioids. And they start really simple, like some stuff that a pharmacist might tell you. And they start to get darker and darker and darker and darker. And you'd be watching the people's face on screen. They're like, what is going on? Like, why are we talking about this? This is crazy. And then I reveal at the end that all that crazy stuff I just mentioned, that was my life. That was me. And in that moment, they have like this realization, like, whoa, like I didn't realize it was that dangerous. It was that serious, or that it could be that serious, that dangerous. And the whole point of the campaign is to raise awareness for options that are out there, right? We're not advocating that someone take any particular over-the-counter medication, just that you discuss the options with your doctor. And any chance you can, like I would encourage people, just from my personal opinion, is that opioids are like a last resort. There's a time and a place for that type of treatment. I don't believe it's at home. I've never believed this since I've been sober. Knowing what I know now about what I've been through and how easy it is to access those things and how quickly you can walk over that invisible line where you're treating your pain and now that you're addicted. And what that does to a family, what that does to like spouses and partners like we discuss here. And the ad, it was a really cool opportunity that came at the right time. Like I don't believe in coincidences anymore. You know, I've seen too much in my life now. I think that this was just sort of like God's timing kind of thing. Just one of those opportunities you get because you've put yourself in that situation. And it's like, he puts it down in front of you and it's like, here, you need to do this thing. Mm-hmm. And so we did. And it released today. Got a virtual media tour coming up to talk about some more of this. Going to be paired up with Mary Bono, Sonny Bono's widow, former California Congresswoman. And she is with Mothers Against Prescription Drug Abuse, MAPTA, I think is what you say. Did I get that right? Or is it MAPTA? My dyslexia is kicking in up here. MAPTA. Looking forward to that. That's going to be really, really cool. But today's been the release and we've been posting and talking about it and it's been kind of surreal, hasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. It's actually been a very emotional day for me. When I listen to the video, I cry.
It's
a very powerful campaign.
Yeah. So let's play it for a second. It's about 3 minutes long. Stick with me. If there are any spots where you're not hearing a lot of audio, there's also some text on the screen as well. And you can access this by heading over to Aleve.com/thepainfultruth, all one word, Aleve.com/thepainfultruth, or by clicking, which is much easier, clicking the link in any of our social media profiles. Mm-hmm. So head over to Tufo Couple and check out any of the social media profile links, the link tree there. It'll have it listed. So let's go ahead and listen. So it starts off with the sound of a video call. This is not your phone ringing.
Yes.
It's been happening all day.
All day we would hear this and I'm like, oh my gosh, whose phone keeps ringing?
Who's calling? All right, so let's get into it.
Are you there? My audio is a little low. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Hi, Christina. My name is Matt Robinson. How are you?
Good, how are you, Matt?
Hi, Crystal. Good to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well.
Can you tell me a little bit about the source of your pain?
So the costochondritis, chondritis, I woke up and I just had a really tight pain in my chest.
I was in an accident where I broke my ankle.
My bones were apparently growing too fast for my muscles to keep up with.
You know, I tried patches and goops and lotions and meds and everything, and it still hurts.
Have opioids ever been a consideration? Have you ever thought about prescription pain relief?
I'll tell you, when you're in back pain,
it could be a consideration. I mean, if you can get rid of this pain,
You know, when I left the hospital, they gave me a prescription.
You'll try what you can try to see what you can do.
Yeah, so we're talking about opioids and treating pain. Side effects are certainly something to consider.
Right.
Common ones that people may experience would be like nausea, vomiting, hypotension, which is lowered blood pressure.
Gotcha.
You may experience some extra perspiration as the body sort of changes temperatures up and down.
Mm-hmm.
You might also find yourself looking forward to your next dose. It's a very effective painkiller. Another side effect is you could notice your behavior changes a bit. You could find yourself lying about everything that you do. Everywhere you are and everywhere that your money is going. You might find yourself going through the medicine cabinets of friends or family or rifling through people's purses.
That's a scary thought.
You might find yourself in your backyard swinging as hard as you can at a fence to break your hand so you can go to the hospital or the ER and get a couple of pills.
Wow.
You might find yourself on Christmas morning with your 9-month-old daughter in the back of your truck, pulling up to a drug house, leaving her in it while the truck is running to go upstairs and get just enough pills to get you through the day.
Oh my gosh.
Christina, that was me.
Oh, really?
Everything I've just told you was my life. These are things that I've done. Yes, I'm an expert in opioids because I was an addict once, and it almost destroyed my life.
Sorry, I'm getting emotional.
I know what you're thinking. It won't happen to you, right?
Powerful. Really powerful.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I have listened to that video maybe 4 times today. And it gets me every time. I listened to it in the car and I was crying. I listened to it in the bedroom because I knew it was going to make me cry. I remember that you sent it to me and I was like, I didn't know I was going to get emotional about it because I don't know. It's just, that was my life too, you know?
Yeah.
And then I think of how it was just the side effects that they talked about and how it got deeper and darker and stuff. It's just, people don't talk about it.
That's the progressive nature of it though. Starts out so innocent. You're having some normal like physical side effects and then your behavior starts to change and then you become something and someone that you swore you'd never be. And before you know, and it's so easy to like write those things off in the moment. Like, oh, it's just, I got it under control. I'm managing it. It's temporary, whatever it might be. Like I come up with a million justifications for that back then. It's really emotional. I know for the average person to hear that story, it's emotional. I mean, strangers that never met were emotional. But for us, this is deep. Because you're right. This was your life too. It's not just mine. You know, you were on the other side of all those things I was doing and you were directly, you know, in the line of fire for all this stuff.
Yeah. The lies, the taking the money, our daughter, you know, all of that. That was all. I was part of that too. I was involved, not involved, but I was within it, you know?
Yeah. You were victim
to it. I didn't know
it.
That you were doing a lot of that stuff, obviously, but when we've talked about that in different podcasts, but I don't know. I think that this campaign is extremely powerful and it needs to be out there for a lot to hear.
Yeah. If you don't already follow the show, subscribe to the show. If you could do us a favor and share that out. That's a conversation that needs to be happening. I know that maybe it doesn't change our story exactly if I had that conversation, but for someone, it will. For some not insignificant number of people, this could be the message they hear that changes their idea about the way that they treat their pain. Because it starts innocent. I had an injury. I didn't mean to walk into this. I wasn't looking for that.
Yeah.
You know, it sort of found me and then it took me. And then it, a decade later, before you wake up and realize what's really happening and decide to do something about it. So it's really cool to be part of this thing. It really is. Like,
yeah.
I mean, from the moment that this was like in the, like the creative crew that put it together, talking to them about it, like it felt like it was just right the entire time. And then the work that we do here till the wheels fall off, it seemed to just like pair in perfectly, you know, because we're talking about the addict's perspective here and like, let's not get people started on it. And then we can hand off from there and like, okay, so what happens if you are here and how do you repair a relationship? How do you deal with all the deceit and the lies and everything else that comes after that? It's really cool to be part of. Like, it's really like, our work is really hard. Don't get me wrong. Like, this is like hard stuff we do. Like, yeah, oftentimes I'm like,
very hard,
man, like this is really heavy emotional stuff. Like, yeah, sometimes I wish we could just like, you know, do something like sew widgets or something.
Right.
You know,
I was thinking about that earlier today. That's so funny. I swear you read my mind. It's like, I wasn't thinking widgets, but I was thinking of just like a t-shirt or something, or just something, you know, like a product. It's just, this is deep, heavy stuff.
But I think that on the other side of that, like the more effort and the more work that goes into it, the more people we can help. Like, this is real authentic stuff. This, yep, is real life stuff that people often don't get a chance to hear.
Right.
So if it's us that have to volunteer to deal with that and to fight through that, like I'm not sitting here saying like we're martyrs, like, oh my gosh, like it's so hard for us. Like, it's beneficial for us too. Like, we sit up here.
Absolutely.
And like I've told Paige before, like in a lot of ways, like this has been like a life hack for a good marriage, because mm-hmm. we sit here every week and we're forced to process some of this stuff. And it might sound like a conversation we've had a million times, and it might be, but it's different when we're sitting here recording it and thinking about it and writing it out and the outlines and everything else. So we've benefited from, no doubt, as well. And we've gotten to meet so many amazing people and get introduced to amazing people and be like, bear witness to people's growth. Like that has been so cool.
Yeah. And we're human too. You know, we still have emotions and we're going to go up and down and we're going to learn from it. And that's what makes us authentic. And I think that that's important, and for others to know that we aren't, you know, always perfect either.
Yeah.
Like, we do have these emotions.
Yeah. And that ad, it's an ad, it's a campaign that we're not selling anything. I mean, we're not like, I mean, Aleev obviously put this on, but at no point are we saying like, buy Aleev. It's not what it's about. It's about options and awareness. Like, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure the people over at Bayer and Aleev would be more than happy if you chose some other method other than opioids.
Yeah.
Like, trying to save lives, right? Yeah. They're in the healthcare industry.
Exactly.
They're trying to save lives. I'm trying to save lives. I'm trying to save marriages, fathers, wives, you know, mothers, like everyone out there who's affected by this.
Yeah.
These are people and all the complexities of people that are affected by this thing. So it's about awareness. And, you know, this weekend was, gosh, like, I think this came up a few times.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We had a really, really cool weekend. So like, everything we just heard on in the campaign is like some of the darker moments of our past, which are irrelevant. Like that happened. Those things happened.
Yeah. It's real.
You know, that Christmas morning story, that's true.
Yeah.
Like, going out in the backyard to break my own hand, that's true. Mm-hmm. I literally broke my own hand so I could go to the doctor and show him, didn't get the x-ray so I could get some pills.
Oh yeah.
Because in my mind,
there's even more stories that I could come up with that I remember you doing. I mean, these are just some of them.
Yeah. It's crazy. Like, in my mind, it was easier to deal with the broken hand than it was to go without the pills and deal with the withdrawal and everything else. Like, how crazy is that?
Yeah.
It's insane. Like, it really is. Like,
it
the
is.
Actions are insane in it.
Yeah.
But when you're in it, it doesn't feel that way.
Exactly.
It's so wild. Yeah. So wild. So going from the dark to something better, like, okay, there is something to look forward to if you choose a path of recovery.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about it a bit here, but I think we spend more time on the dark side of this thing than anything.
We do.
Kind of have to, because most people are there. Like, there are far fewer that have actually figured out how to get out of it.
Yes. And sometimes I'm hesitant to discuss the highlights of our lives, just because it can be triggering for those that are hurting. So I try to be mindful in that. But I also understand that it can bring hope to others too. So it's a gray area right there, you know?
So let's talk about some of the better moments, some of the warmer moments, like what life gets to look like now.
Yeah. Let's talk about this weekend and what we did.
Okay. So we booked a family weekend at the summer camp that our kids attend.
Uh-huh.
So it was Friday evening, all day Saturday, Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a summer camp that they love dearly.
First of all, whenever you got this email about this and saying that you wanted to do it, I was a bit surprised. Not going to lie. Because old Matt would not be up for this. You know, you used to not want to do anything. Like when Matt was in active addiction, he wasn't the kind of person who went out to bars all the time or went out to people's homes to like party. We were hermits. We stayed home all the time. You didn't want to do anything. You didn't want to go to family functions. You didn't want to do anything. So fast forward now, whenever you sent that to me and you were like, hey, let's go do this family fun activity, it's still kind of like, wow, I can't believe that he's actually wanting to do this. I still think about that. And I'm still like, oh, wow, this is kind of awesome.
Those types of moments come up a lot. Mm-hmm. Like you're still really shocked by behaviors. It just goes to show like how deep some of those wounds can be.
Absolutely. I like the holidays and stuff like that. You know, it's taken me because I had to train my brain.
For disappointment?
For disappointment. I did. I had to, I started to do what you did. And I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to go with the flow with him because I don't want to rock the boat. So I had to learn to do what you wanted to do instead of what I had wanted to do beforehand. So now I'm having to switch it around and it's hard. It's hard. And I've told you that for years that it's hard to, you know, switch your mind to where you were before, where I was before.
Like holidays, you mean like how I never used to want to go to anything.
Yeah.
And now it's like, I want to go to every single family function there yes. is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I've changed a lot. I mean, my value set has changed. I've grown so much. The things I believe to be important, the things I hold dear, are completely different than they were back then. Mm-hmm. Part of that's it's just maturing in age, but the bigger part of that is the changes that take place from challenging yourself completely sober and challenging yourself to be a better man, a better person in this last 4,000 days.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool sometimes and it's sort of validating in moments. And I think this is sort of important. And like, I think you've always done a really, really good job at supporting me and telling me that you're proud of me. I think that people do need that.
I agree.
I think validation is important for everybody. I think, and don't get me wrong, like we've had those conversations where you've told me like, what do you want, a freaking cookie for like being an adult today?
Yeah.
Like congratulations.
Right.
Some people might feel that way. I think that you'd be selling yourself short on the benefit of really picking someone up and like what that can do for somebody and what that can do for a marriage and a relationship. I know it's easy to take these things for granted, but even today still you will make mention like, man, it's just so cool. You want to do things like this. Like we're talking over a decade later and you're still reminding me like, keep going. I love what I'm seeing. Everyone loves what they're seeing. I know you love what you're doing. Keep it up. Mm-hmm. And it's really important to do that. No matter if you're dealing with addiction or anything else, if you know someone who's ever been through a tough time and they're winning today, make sure to remind them that you see that.
Let them know.
That's huge.
It means a lot.
Yeah. Just like we see like wheelies all the time. Like we see you. We see you.
Yeah, we do.
You're doing it.
Yeah.
You're killing it.
Yep.
You're doing great.
Mm-hmm.
It's important.
Yeah.
It's important. So anyway, we booked this thing that you didn't expect me to book. We take a family road trip, which I love road trips. Road trips are my favorite.
Yes, we do love road trips. You were saying that you would rather take a road trip than fly.
There is a distance, though, where it's like, this is just impractical.
That's another thing, though. You used to not be like that.
Mm-mm. Get there as fast as possible because I couldn't drink in the car. Couldn't use drugs or anything in the car. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, car trips used to be pretty inconvenient. Now, it's all about the journey, not the destination.
It's great.
So we have road trips. Like, I love stopping at roadside gas stations and loading up on snacks. I must have stopped 4 or 5 times.
But the worst part about sitting in the car for so long is your back.
Yeah, this is something we don't talk a lot about.
No.
So I've originally was introduced to opiates because of an injury. I broke my leg when I was a kid playing football. Had 3 surgeries on that leg over the course of a couple of years. It was 2 or 3 years to get it fixed. Like I broke at the growth plate during like right when I was finishing my growth spurt. They weren't sure what it was going to like be like. And it was a bad break. I had screws and rods and the whole bit reconstructed.
It was a gnarly scar.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like a road map on my ankle. Yeah. And then a few years later, I broke my back. I was moving a filing cabinet down some stairs and the guy I was moving it with, it slipped out of his hands at the top. This thing was super heavy. We didn't even empty it out. Like we were so dumb. We just like, oh, we'll figure it out. You're supposed to empty a filing cabinet.
You were like 17 years old.
Yeah, I was a teenager. And so we were just being dumb, you know? And it fell down the stairs, landed on top of me, and I broke a vertebrae, herniated several discs. And I didn't treat it. I didn't do anything about it. I just got pain pills for it. And then years later, it just like, it's one of those, like it's degenerative. So it gets worse over time. And it just got worse and worse and worse and worse to the point where I was having to get injections all the time. Now, this was an active addiction. I was getting injections on the reg because every time I went to go get injections, I would also get a refill on my prescriptions.
Yeah, and they were lots of pills.
Lots of pills. I was, oh my gosh.
Big ass bottle.
Crazy amounts of pills.
That you would blow through in less than a week.
Yeah, like a 3-month supply.
Yeah.
In like a week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was insane.
That's why you went to the streets.
Yeah, so I had to go, that's why I had to go to the streets because the doctor couldn't keep up with my habit.
Mm-hmm.
Insurance companies were sending letters to my mom's house like, hey, we notice you're getting a lot of prescriptions for a lot of drugs. If you need help, you know, there's resources for you. And I just remember throwing that in the trash. Like they're on to me, you know?
Yeah.
Somewhere out there, there's on someone's record in an insurance office, that letter is still out there somewhere. Yep. I'm some kind of a risk of some kind. But anyway, I've had back problems. The back problems didn't go away. Like I got sober and I learned how to deal with my pain in different ways. But it's getting worse and it gets worse and worse and worse. And every year it gets a little bit worse. Mm-hmm. I still get injections about once a year.
Yes.
And they give you some relief. Don't get me wrong. But for the most part, it's I've had to learn how to manage pain.
Right.
There was a narrative that was sold to the American public in the probably early to mid 2000s that we shouldn't be in pain. And there were pharmaceutical companies like Purdue that were selling this idea that like we want to eliminate all pain. We want everyone to be pain-free. And it was this very like performative empathy, like really sadistic and like manipulative tale about how they didn't want people to be in pain, but they were really just trying to get people hooked on drugs.
Yeah.
And that's come out. There's tons of documentaries about it. Like Dope Sick's a really good one.
Really good one.
There are others that are just, I mean, this is a well-told story that's out there.
Yeah.
But I was, you know, I was in the middle of that. I was right in the middle of that. And so you could go in there with any amount of pain and they were giving you crazy amounts of opioids. When I got sober, I learned that pain is part of healing. I remember reading a book. I can't remember the name of the book. God, I cannot remember it now. It was about pain. I picked it up in treatment. God, I could not tell you. Remember that book? It was like a big workbook. Couldn't tell you what it's called. Either way, it talked about the history of pain treatment and things like that. And at one time it was believed, and still in many cultures, it's believed that pain is part of the healing process. It is a natural part and necessary part of the healing process.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're supposed to go through some level of pain.
Yeah.
And so I really took that and I ran with it. And I agree with that 100%. And listening to my body and the kind of pain that I'm in, I just have to pull back at times. Like there's certain things I can't do. Like I have no business doing deadlifts or squats anymore.
Or jumping on trampolines.
Jumping on trampolines. Yeah. Like a lot of the things that like, yeah, it sounds like fun, or grabbing a box, or, you know, 3 or 4 days of like walking at like the fair, or like spring training in baseball. Like there's a certain, I have to know my limits now. I have to know my limits.
And that's so hard for Matt.
I'm just like one of those people that just like go, 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 go.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm really athletic. Or actually I like to be, I'm not like really athletic. I'm,
oh my gosh, you're so athletic.
I like to be active. I like to be active.
Okay.
Ride bikes. I run, I play sports, all kinds of stuff. And I get hurt really easily, you know, and I have to deal with that in different ways now. Like I understand now that pain is part of healing, so I'm totally fine being in pain. There's some level of pain though that is debilitating and you can't do much about it. So there are times where I will turn to over-the-counter drugs,
mm-hmm.
things like Aleve, things like ibuprofen, Tylenol, like all the basic ones everyone knows about. And I'll have to rest. I'll have to do stretches, yoga, take it easy. I have to do a lot of cat-cow.
Yeah, but you can't do the
not cat. So much cow. I can
no,
do cat.
It's cow. Cat.
Cat. Not so much cow because anytime you
do that, it's like when you lay on your stomach. Like I can't even do that. That makes my back
I think
hurt.
It's flexion. Yeah, flexion. Anytime
I don't know what you're
flexion
talking about
on the vertebrae, man. It tears me up. Tears me up really bad. But either way, in the car, it starts to wear on me. I can get about an hour and a half in a car before it really starts to bother me. And then it starts to ache, and then it starts to radiate down my legs and into my hips and into my knees, and then my feet will go numb. Man, it hurts.
Yeah.
It hurts.
Yeah. And then whenever we got to our destination or whatnot, the camp was going to be all about activities. That's all we did all weekend long was jump, play, run, you know, kick balls and dance and just, you know, we were active.
Nonstop.
Lots of walking, though.
Tons of walking.
And walking for you is
maybe the worst. Really walking painful. And standing around hurt.
Yeah, yeah. Walking bad. And standing is whenever you get like really, you get a little irritated. You're not that bad. I mean, I can tell. I know you. I know when you're in pain and you don't even have to say anything.
Is it a face I make or something?
It's not a face. It's just your demeanor. It's the way that I...
You always know.
You're quiet. You're just not like your goofy self. Like, I can just tell. I know when you're in pain. And I remember too, they had that big bounce jump thing there. And the kids were even like, Dad, you're not getting on that. You're not getting on that. Because you did hurt your back.
Really bad
at like trampoline last park. Year. Yeah, a year and a half ago or something at a trampoline park. And the kids witnessed it and they're like, no, Dad, no. So they know all about your back. Like our son is even at a point now, he's almost 10 and he'll walk around saying, oh, my back hurts.
Just
my
watching back. My old ass.
He is. He's been picking up on it and stuff. So I'm kind of like, I've been really mindful. I've been trying to discuss with you like, okay, baby, no, kind of pull it back a little bit just so he doesn't take that on. Mm-hmm. But I know that you're in pain and I know, but you still keep going. You raced our daughter.
Yeah, man. I smoked her.
Yeah, you did. But she was pretty good,
She's
though.
She's
faster than me. Like, I even ran with her, and I'm like, okay, you kicked my butt. I don't even want to do that
anymore.
No,
we played basketball. Really we played tennis.
That go-go ball or whatever it is. And that's hard on the back. Like, that was even hurting me. Like, we were sore after this weekend. Played
baseball, all kinds of stuff. Yeah, yeah.
But you didn't have to take... anything.
I didn't have to take anything heavier than
like you said earlier, over the counter drugs.
That's it. And rest. Mm-hmm. Rest helps a lot. Just have to get off my feet. I have to be more mindful of it. I have to sit down at times. Like I don't like there are no medals given out for being tough.
No.
And when I'm the one that has to deal with it in the evenings and you guys have to deal with it because I'm not able to get up and move around. Like there are no medals given out for that. You know, I don't like to be an inconvenience to anyone. So I just kind of quietly go find a bench or something like that. And I'll have to relax a little bit and just deal with it.
Yeah. And there are times where I'm like, okay, I don't want you to do this because I can't pick you up. So I'm going to have to call an ambulance.
That's always been your biggest fear. If you end
up doing things. I think in the future, I have this whole reel that plays out because I know that if you do something that's going to hurt yourself, there's not much I can do. So I really, that's why it's not me controlling you. It's like you're affecting me too. That's why, yeah, that's where this
interdependence comes in. I'm going to have to deal with this when you go down, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also being, you know, I'm also caring about you, obviously, but I do have to let you know, you're like, you're going to affect me too. So let's kind of be mindful on your part.
Yeah. Whenever I first got sober, this was a major concern of mine. Like, what if I get hurt again? Like, what's going to happen if I get hurt again? Mm-hmm. For so long, I really feared pain. Like, I was scared to death of pain. Like, anytime I felt pain, I was like, uh-oh, this is bad. Like, this is a trigger. Like, I'm going to have to, like, do something to make it go away. And I've really, really shifted that mindset to where it's like, it's not damaging to my health right now. It's uncomfortable. I can deal with discomfort. That's fine. It's totally fine. Like discomfort is part of life. Like we've preached that here forever.
Oh yeah.
That discomfort's part of life.
Helps you grow. Pain is
part of life. And I don't think there's anyone walking around in their late 30s, 40s, 50s and beyond that's not in some level of pain from something. You know, we carry that around.
Yeah.
It's just how are you going to deal with it? Mm-hmm. I know one way that I can't deal with it, which is through any type of narcotic or any type of mood or mind altering substance.
Yeah.
I just can't. I've taken steroids and things like that, and I'll take over-the-counter like steroids, like prescription steroids. We're not talking about like Hulk steroids. I mean like prednisone, things like to reduce swelling. Mm-hmm. I'll get injections every so often, but you know, I have to deal with it. And then I've been asked the question, like, would you ever take opioids again? I'm like, man, I don't think so. It would have to be really, really, really bad under the rights. Like I would have to be in like a massive car wreck or something.
Or surgery.
Even then, like if I with surgery, like for instance, one day, like doctors mm-hmm. have told me many times that like, you have to have surgery. You're going to have back surgery. This is going to get way worse before it's not going to get better. And I've thought about it. I'm like, could I get through a surgery without the use of like opioids? Yeah, I think I could. I do. It might be miserable, but I know what the alternative looks like. And that's not worth it for me. I've been through kidney stones. I've been through broken bones. I've been through more back flare-ups than I can possibly count. Vasectomy, like all kinds of these like injuries that people usually get this stuff for.
And the vasectomy was not normal.
Man, listen to your doctor when he tells you not to walk anywhere after that.
I had to throw that out there because that you were miserable.
Me
after
being
that.
Me, I got the vasectomy on like October 30th.
Yeah.
And then the next day was Halloween.
Our favorite holiday.
And the kids were little. It's like, man, I'm not going to not go trick-or-treating. Like I have to go trick-or-treating with them. I'll be conscious of it. You know, I took some ibuprofen beforehand. Man, we got done. You talk about some swelling. It was uncomfortable. Walking around with a softball between your legs, man, that was horrible.
I'm not meaning to laugh, but then again, most of the time when stuff like this happens, you don't listen to the doctors.
Yeah.
It's just like after certain injections.
That's what I get.
They'll tell you, you need to chill out. And you're like, oh, I'll be fine. I'll be good. And I don't tell you not to do things because I'm like, all right, this is on you. This part is on you.
Such is the mind of an addict, though. You know, I'm different. You don't understand. I know my body better than you do. I know me. Yeah, right. Listen to your doctors. If I've learned anything at all, just listen to the doctor. Take it easy. Listen to the doctor, man. It's a lot easier.
It's worth it.
Yeah, but like I'm not a martyr, right? So if I was ever in a situation where I had no choice, like if it was excruciating where I'm about to pass out, like would I consider it? Yeah, under the right setting. I would contact everyone in my sober network. I would have increased layers of accountability with doctors and nurses as well as you.
Yep.
People would know. And I certainly wouldn't take them out of the hospital. I don't think I would take them out of a hospital. I can't see myself handling that well. I've got 10 years of experience that says I can't handle that well.
You know, it'd be really triggering for me to have to
disperse pills.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah. I don't think we've actually really talked about that, but that'd be really hard for me.
Yeah. The thing about addiction is that it never goes away.
Yeah.
It never goes away. Like there's an old saying in the rooms of 12-step communities is that like your addiction is just in the parking lot doing push-ups, just waiting for you. Like he's just out there getting stronger and stronger and stronger. He's waiting for the day that you think that you're fixed or you're better or it's going to be different. And then it comes back way stronger. All you do is hit pause. You don't stop and start over from the beginning again. All I did was hit pause. On April 13th, 2013, I hit pause. And I've been paused ever since. If I pick back up, you don't pick back up from when I was 12 or 13 years old. You pick back up from where you left off.
Yeah.
Which is, for me, like, I ain't going to be around much longer. I know this. And I've seen this more times than I can count. Which is like for me at this point in my like sobriety, like one of the greatest benefits, this is going to sound horrible, but don't take it this way. One of the greatest benefits of going to 12-step meetings and going to treatment centers is to be reminded of people who thought that they were smarter to come back. Like I watched the scouts come back with arrows in their ass and they say, it didn't get any better, man. I thought I could figure it out. I thought it'd be different this time. And they come back and remind me what's out there for me if I want to go try it. I'm like, thanks for the reminder. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
At this point, I've figured out how to live sober. I'm still learning every day, but that's a lesson I need to be reminded of.
Yeah, it's powerful.
I've seen it happen more times than I can count. And I know that I will not be any different. I know I wouldn't. So today I choose sobriety.
That's great. And I'm really proud of you. But I do want to go back to this weekend for just a second about how did it feel having fun sober?
Well, it's not my first time. Having fun sober.
Well, I know that, but like
this was special.
This one was different.
This was really special. Like, it's pretty rare we're able to get away. We're really busy. It's rare we're able to get away like that as a family when we're not like on someone else's clock or we're all together like that. It's amazing. Like there are moments I have to stop and pause and try not to get emotional because I'm just like, this is so incredible. Like, I'm here. I'm clear-minded. I'm watching my kids smile. I'm looking at you, looking at them. And like just the love I have for that moment and you in that moment and them and just the gratitude you feel, like it makes you want to cry. Mm-hmm. Like it chokes you up just thinking about where things were headed and where they could be, but where they're not. And just the grace that you feel that like, holy crap, like we're not there. It's like waking up from a bad dream and none of it's real. And in that moment, you're just like, oh, thank God. I didn't ruin everything. You know, it's like how Scrooge must have felt the morning after he was visited by the, you know, the Christmas ghosts. It's like, I didn't ruin everything. I'm okay. Everything's okay. And I just feel so much gratitude in those moments. I'm able to watch you guys and spend time with you. Like, we did so many fun things as a family this weekend.
Yeah, we did. And I also think that we were a great team on the last night.
Oh my gosh, man.
When we had a struggling child.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So our kid is a puker.
They call kids puke.
He's a puker, you know, like he pukes like on the reg.
No, not on the reg. It's just he's not very good at making the puke to the toilet.
No. So like one time I overfed him like a goldfish. Like, don't overfeed the goldfish because they'll just eat it all.
That was a lesson a dad had to learn.
Man, we went to spring training a couple years back, yeah, and I fed him from sun up to sundown. Anything.
Well, he'll be fine.
Man, I woke up to the sound of, you know, heaving, and I thought I was in the clear. There was just a little bit on the bowl, and I was like, oh, you okay, buddy? Like, y'all good? I'll get you some water because it burns your nose, you know? He was really upset that his nose was burning because it came out of his nose. And then as I'm walking back to my bed, I look at the side of my, like, my peripheral just picks something up, and it looks like, I mean, someone just slaughtered something. I mean, it is like, I mean, it looks like a sacrifice took place over here. So much vomit, right? And you're in a hotel room, so I don't have like carpet cleaner or anything else. And it's like 2 or 3 in the morning. So your brain is trying to process like what happened.
And I was not there to clean it up.
No, it was just me. But anyway, we went to dinner, like, which was really cool. We got to eat camp food, which was really, really cool. So we go and they had spaghetti and meatballs that night. Mm-hmm. Really good. We go play, hang out. They had a dance that night. We go dance around a little bit. We both picked up on a couple dances. That was fun.
Yeah.
And then get back to the cabin. He starts feeling sick, like kind of out of nowhere. And like this kid just like refuses to puke in a toilet. I don't know what it is, man. I don't know if that's just me and him. Like just I'm going to do what everyone else doesn't do. Like I'm just going to.
I tried and I got really frustrated. And you were getting frustrated with me because I was frustrated with the whole situation. But you missed a little bit of it. So.
I must have missed the fight that happened beforehand. But yeah. Either way, he threw up. And he's a puker, right? So I don't think too much of it. Like, yeah, he's a puker. He puked. Mm-hmm. That's what pukers do. So we go to bed.
Okay. Joe Dirt. There's a big pile of puke over there. You might want to pick up the puke.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that scene. It's a pretty big pile of puke.
Yeah.
So he wakes up in the middle of the night. It's like we'd been asleep about an hour or so. He wakes up like screaming like a nightmare.
Yeah. And oh, it's heartbreaking.
For some reason, I just like it just like it identified like the noises. Like, mm-hmm. I think he's about to puke. Mm-hmm. So I jumped up. I ran toward him. I'm like, come on, let's get outside. Get outside. Open up the cabin door. And as soon as I open up the door, I hear splat, plop, plop, plop. And I just go, oh, F. Like, oh, we almost made it, man. Like he puked at the threshold. So we're cleaning it all up. And then he's like every hour or 45 minutes, it comes like back. Hour. He had a virus at this, like, at this point, we're like, oh, he's got a virus or food poisoning, but none of us were sick. So virus.
Yeah.
He's puking like every hour. So and he puked, I don't know, 8, 9 times that night.
I don't know. It was more dry heaving, but you don't have to say pee. Let's
So the first 3 or 4, like the first one, it was me and you. And then after that, it was just me.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just you. So we kind of like traded.
Yeah.
Like tending to him.
And yeah,
like,
it was great.
We were a team, man.
Yeah. I don't see that being handled that great had it been, you know, 11 years ago.
No way.
It would have been awful.
Awful.
Traumatizing.
Yeah.
For all involved.
For sure.
So I know people might hear these things and think, okay, big deal, but it is a big deal. If you're in it and you understand the dynamics of these relationships and the situations that happen and how there's so much anger and frustration and how addicts don't know how to, you know, process their emotions appropriately. This is a big deal. It's a big deal when I see you do things like that. And of course you can say, oh, well, you're a grown up, you know, you're a grown man. You should know how to do this. But there are a lot of grown men out there who would not have handled it like you did.
Thank you.
I think it's great. And every time it happens, I it's a new core memory, you know, it's overriding the things that happened in the past.
Yeah. Those things will never go away, but eventually mm-mm. You'll have so many new ones where it's like, oh, this is the norm now.
Yes. But it takes time.
But even a decade later, you're still not like, oh, this is the norm.
Right.
You know, you still recognize those as like new behaviors.
Yes.
Which just goes to show how long it can take.
Well, that and how much of an impact the negative can have on you.
Big time. Yeah. Big time. Yeah. But we had more than a few instances. I remember what I was doing. Oh, we volunteered to take part in a competition. They gave us a giant bowl of whipped cream, and it had these little, they call them merits. It's like things you earn at camp for doing good deeds. And there was like four or five merits buried in this giant bowl of whipped cream. And you had to dig out the merits with nothing but your face. And so me and our son volunteered to do this. And like our hands went up right away and we got called up there and we ended up winning the competition. But when I got done, you said to me, it's going to be hard to say without crying. You said, I think I just fell more in love with you. That was really cool. And it took me a second. I'm like, why? Because I won the whipped cream competition? Because I flexed on the other dad, you know? But then like that, you know, just millisecond of a thought, I was like, oh, it's because I'm present with my family and I'm doing the things that we always dream we do. And we're actually doing them right now. Like that was powerful. That was cool. That's not anything I ever would have done before. No. And it's not performative. Like I'm not doing these things because I feel like I'm making up for lost time. Like I want to do these things. Like this is the life I signed up for originally. And I finally just get to live it. And it's cool. It's just really cool. I don't know the way to put it. I'm just extremely grateful for it. Like I'm never proud of it. I'm just grateful.
Yeah.
Really grateful. Like I sit there in like pure grace. Like I don't deserve any of these things. Like if I got like, people don't get what they deserve. If people got what they deserved, I would be in jail. Yeah. And I would be single and you'd be married to some wonderful man and he would be raising my kids. That's what happens when people get what they deserve. I got grace, you know, something that I truly didn't deserve or earn, but I was given an opportunity and I took it. And I just decided to put everything I thought I knew and everything I believed aside. And I'm just like, I gotta try something else. And I owe it to the people that were there for me in the beginning, and not just you, I'm talking about people who were sober that showed me that it could be done.
Yeah.
And they were showing me that you could be happy and sober and that you could find a replacement that wasn't just like going to make things, you know, tolerable for those around you, but there was a true substitute for a better life. It's like, if you couldn't show me something better, then I never would have done it. I never would have gotten sober. If it wasn't going to be better, I'll just go back to doing what I was doing, man. This is so much better. But I owe it to those people in the beginning, like my sponsor, my 12-step sponsor, all the people that came and volunteered their time to show me it could be done. And man, I'm just grateful. I'm just grateful. Like that's grace. Like I don't deserve any of this, but I'm so fortunate, so lucky.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Thanks for dealing with me.
No, thanks for dealing with me too. I did want to ask you some questions. I mean, you answered a lot of the questions that I had on here.
Okay.
Within what we were discussing. But, you know, you talked about how you take over-the-counter medications for your back pain. Well, there are a lot of people who self-medicate with alcohol and stuff like that. Well, your drug of choice was opioids and things like that.
Primarily.
And
amphetamines.
So why did you stop drinking and smoking weed and even taking you were on amphetamines as well, which was a prescription, when you became clean?
So opioids were a problem for me from the very beginning. Like when I checked into treatment, my goal was to stop taking opioids. I need to get off these opioids or I need to learn how to manage my use. It was described to me pretty clearly. It's like, that's not how this works. Let's go through your history. So I sat down and I kind of went through my history honestly, right? Really honest. I heard someone say one of the first days I was in treatment, they said, many addicts have relapsed thinking that alcohol was not a drug. So many people have done that. Like, well, I didn't have a problem with alcohol, or I didn't have a problem with opiates, or I didn't have a problem with Adderall. Or I didn't have a problem with weed. My problem was X. And they just focus on X. For me, any mood or mind-altering substance, anything that makes me feel good and do bad shit, I'm going to chase. That is my personality. When I'm really honest with myself, that is what I do. So I had to consider, okay, now let's pretend that you're in your house 6 months from now, we've removed opioids, but you think you can smoke weed. How would I smoke weed? I'll tell you how I'll smoke weed. All day, every day. That's how I'd smoke weed. Okay, let's take away the weed, but you can drink. How would you drink? All day, every day. That's how I do things. That's how addicts operate. So for me, it's solid, liquid, or gas. It doesn't matter. It's all the same thing. When I get a substance in my body that changes my state of mind, I want more. It's like this allergy kicks in. That's what Dr. Silkworth called it in the doctor's opinion. I guess it's a preface or forward to in the book of AA.
Yeah.
He talks about this and he's like, it's like an allergy. It's like the phenomenon of craving happens. Like something happens in my brain. Jordan Peterson did a study on this. He's a psychologist, psychiatrist. I think he's a psychologist.
I don't know.
In Canada, he was doing these studies and he identified, like, he could see addicts looking at their blood alcohol, measuring their desire. So they would hook them up to all these brain things, right? This, like, somehow measured your brain waves, right? And on the ascending alcohol curve, so as your blood alcohol content is rising, some people get an abnormal response where they want more. Most people, your average drinker, enjoys that feeling and then lets it go back down. Guys like me don't know when to stop. It's like the phenomenon of craving kicks in. I need that to be stronger. I need multiples of that. I need that to last forever. That's what happens in my brain. And I've known this about myself from the first time I ever took a substance. So I'd be lying if I thought, could I drink ever again? Like, in the beginning, I was like, maybe, yeah. But yeah. Where would we end up, though? Mm-hmm. If I've screwed it up here, I'm probably going to screw it up there. Yeah. And it's just the truth I have with myself. And it's like, I'm resigned to that. I had a really good run. Like, I think about it. Like, I retired with a really good career of drinking and using. Like, I took a lifetime's worth in a very small amount of time. I've had my dosage. I'm good. I've experienced everything you could experience with all those substances. All the things that people do. So there was nothing more to explore. There was only pain and regret and sorrow and, like, destruction left.
Well, kudos to you for being real with yourself.
That's hard. It's hard for a lot of people, I find.
Yes.
Really hard for a lot of people.
Yeah. And I think that is what, I think that's a huge thing that helped you become as successful as you are in your sobriety, is that you were honest from the get-go.
Honesty in this deal is indispensable. You have to be honest with yourself. Mm-hmm. If you can't be honest with yourself, you have no chance. You have no chance. And self-deceit is it's one of the features of the addict mind, is self-deceit, projection, denial, all these things. You have to be able to identify that within yourself and to make decisions that are best for your future self. So for me, like, the decision early on that I'm just not going to use any sort of mood or mind altering substance, it was a very conscious thought because I know where I would end up. And why did I know that? Well, I had evidence in the past to show where I had done it before.
Right.
So why would it be any different?
Yeah.
Why would it be different? And we use that logic for everything else in life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. We could look at okay, let's say that someone's a bank robber, right? They're a bank robber, right? What are they likely to do again? Rob banks or steal. That's what they do. It's just what they do. It's what they're going to do. Okay. Well, so we're going to give them a job in a bank. No, we probably shouldn't do that. Right. They have a history of this. Addicts, alcoholics, I think you have to look at yourself in much the same way, where it's, this is my history. I tend to abuse things. I tend to go too hard on things. Even cough medicine.
Oh, yeah.
When those things kick in, it's like, kind of feels nice, man. I wonder what two would feel like,
mm-hmm.
three would feel like. I heard this freaking joke that illustrates this perfectly, okay? There's an AA group with like 50 people, and they're sitting there. They're in a meeting. It's quiet. Someone's talking. And then a doctor bursts in the room and he's holding up a pill. And he's like, I have discovered the cure for alcoholism. All you have to do is take this one pill and you're completely cured forever. And the alcoholics are just silent. They're just sitting there staring. Until one moment, one of them stands up. He raises his hand and he goes, what happens if you take two? I think that illustrates perfectly the mind of an addict or an alcoholic.
Wow.
What happens if you take more? What happens if you take two? How could I make that stronger? What can I add to this to make it different? That's what our brains do.
That's crazy.
And once you have that truth about yourself, it's your responsibility now to manage it. There are many people who for years and years and years and years will try against everything to manage that. And what I have seen through my experience of being in the rooms for 11 years, working with other people and just being in this space, is that I've never seen a single person figure it out. Why would it be me? I'm the average, right? Like, I'm the middle of the bell curve. So if I'm the middle of the bell curve, I'm probably just like them. I'm not special. I'm just not special. I would be just like them. And I think you just have to accept that truth about yourself. A lot of people just have a really hard time doing it. They think that they're different, they're unique, or they can't drop the fantasy of, you know, like the romanticism of the use. A lot of people romanticize it. Mm-hmm. It's like they remember the one time they got it perfect. They forget the 50 other times that it went terribly wrong.
Yep.
You know, they want to remember that one time in Mexico when they were with their wife, and the night was just perfect, man. And they made love, and it was great, and it was on the beach. And but they don't want to remember the DWI. They don't want to remember, like, you know, getting fired because you're hungover, or any other problems that we have, screaming at your kids or drinking, like sneak drinking, things, these things. They don't want to remember that stuff. That's what addiction does.
Yeah.
So like, once I know I have this thing in my brain, okay, now what can I do to work back against that? And that was like the first thing I decided to do was like, I can't do anything, man. I know this about myself.
Yeah. Wow. That's good. What advice would you give someone who is struggling with daily pain and wants to self-medicate? And not just with pills or whatnot, even alcohol.
Yeah, I would say that alcohol hasn't been used in medicine since like 1916. So like, you're not Wyatt Earp at the OK Corral after the shootout, man. They're not using whiskey anymore to medicate pain. It is an ineffective way to medicate pain.
What about emotional pain?
Horribly ineffective. It causes more. Mm-hmm. It makes anxiety worse.
Yes, it's a depressant.
Depressant.
Right.
It's not good for someone who's depressed.
Yeah. That's an excuse we see a lot.
And I've been here, so I'm going to speak for myself, is that what you want in those moments is a release from the pain that you're feeling. You want to feel anything other than the way you're feeling. But the only way out is through.
Yeah.
The only way out is through. You're not going to figure it out by going backwards or under, which is what we think.
Yeah.
Let me just run from this for a moment. Let me zone out. Let me just get away from it for a while. Every time you refuse not to deal with the emotion in front of you, all you're doing is putting it on a credit card to be paid later at a higher interest rate. That's it. It gets paid eventually. Do you want to pay more? You want to pay in more pain? Or you want to deal with it right now? Let's just deal with it right now. Let's get it over with. Right?
Yeah. This just reminds me, we're going to do an episode on anger and how suppressing anger can make things worse.
Same thing. So anyone that's self-medicating, listen, I'm not judging you. I did this forever. I get it.
There's no judgment.
I get it.
But
what I'm saying is that there is no benefit to doing it. Mm-hmm. You're causing yourself more problems.
Pain. Yep.
More pain.
Yep.
And for so many people, they don't realize what that pain looks like. They don't see it in their loved ones. They don't see it in the minds of their loved ones when their loved ones are alone in their private thoughts and they're thinking about how they were treated or what was said, because we're too volatile to like address anything with. Like, you're creating like this phantom show of a family without even realizing it.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many issues that stem from this. And like, you think you're being sneaky, but everyone knows. Like, we see it. But there's a way out. It's just how honest you want to be.
Are there any warning signs or triggers that you've learned to watch out for to prevent relapse?
So I haven't relapsed since I got sober, but I've relapsed plenty of times before I finally got sober.
Right.
Pain was a trigger for me. Pain was a trigger. And it was because I believed, and I'm not, listen, what I'm about to say is going to sound like I'm trying to be a victim, but I'm not. But here's what the reason I think I associated pain with, like, let's get out of pain, is because this is what the doctors told me. This is what everyone in my care told me. It's like, oh, you have a problem. Here's a pill. Oh, you feel this. Here's a syrup. Like, whatever it might be, whatever ailment you have, we will fix. You're not supposed to feel anything other than happiness and peace all the time. So I think it started with that. It's like this idea that I shouldn't be in pain. So once I came to accept that healing, part of the healing process was dealing with pain, I become just more open to it, like start to feel and experience my pain. And then I had this thought one day, I'm like, is this really that bad? Like, is my pain really that bad? Isn't it all relative? And so I would start to do things that I wouldn't normally do. Like, used to be, as soon as my back would hurt, I would just like lay in bed all day long, take pills. Then I was like, well, let me go do something. Like, I would get up and go hang out and like, it's not that bad. Like, I'm able to do all these things. It's just pain. And it's like, I've told our son this before. Like, I think kids watch a lot of like pro sports, like soccer, and they'll watch guys that are like flopping for an injury.
Yeah.
And the reason they do that is because they're trying to get a penalty that's going to help their team, right? It's dishonest, but it's part of the game, is what it is. But he's like really embellishing these injuries. Like, he's like limping around. And I'm like, are you hurt or are you injured? Because there's a difference. If you're hurt, suck it up. If you're injured, that's a different conversation. That means there's something structurally wrong with the body. Yeah. We got to get this fixed. Something's torn. Something's broken. Are you hurt? Suck it up. Quit being a bitch. That's what I tell myself now. Like, as crude as it sounds, suck it up. It's okay. It's just pain.
Yeah, and you get through it.
It's just
by
pain.
Doing
you,
that.
This will pass. This is okay. It's not going to end your day. There's some degree of this you're going to have to accept, and it's okay. Sometimes it gets bad enough where I'll have to take something over the counter. I'll have to rest. I'll use ice or heat or whatever it might be. But that was one of my triggers. Another trigger for a lot of people is boredom.
Oh, yeah.
It's a big one, man. Mm-hmm. The ability to sit still and just feel and just be is so hard in early recovery. It's like, it's one of the hardest things. One of the hardest things about like active addiction too, is just being, just sitting here without anything. Like, what the hell do you do? What am I supposed to do with all this time and all these feels and like, or the lack of feelings? Like, what do you do? Like, I had to learn how to fill time. Like, boredom was a huge trigger.
I was going to ask you, do you find that your life is boring now?
No, I don't think it is at all, man. I'm more busy than, I don't have to do. I have more crap to do than I literally, like, more shit to do than I can stand.
But a different
type. It wasn't always that way, though.
I guess people would call us boring, though, because we don't do what's social norms are. We don't go out and party. We don't have parties. We don't have a lot of dinner parties. You know, we just don't get out much. So a lot of people would say that our life is boring, but the reality is it's very fulfilling, the things that we do and what we fill them up with.
Like, I think it's disingenuous to say that being sober is always more fun than people who drink, because I don't think it's always true. Like, there are some events that I'll go to. Like, we've been to nightclubs, we've been to stuff like that. And I have to consciously force myself to get out there and dance and put myself in those situations. And I have to feel all the awkwardness. It's more fun when you're drunk. Let's all just be honest.
Yeah.
It's more fun. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm having 80 or 90% as much fun. Is that worth it to me? That cost benefit? Is the 20% of awkward feelings worth all of the wreckage? Yes, it is. But is it as fun? No, not. It's not. Let's just be real about it.
Yeah.
That's why people drink. People drink because they like the effects. They like because it's fun.
Yeah.
So you have to redefine what fun is, and you find more fulfilling ways to spend your time. For me, one of the reasons, and this is a lot of self dark work I did, like I say dark, it's like shadow work really, early on, was I had a lack of purpose. And that led to this empty feeling that I filled with drugs and alcohol. Purpose to people like me now comes very simply. When you're sober and you found a way out, you are in a very unique and interesting, you have a unique opportunity to be really useful to the world by telling your story and helping others to get there. So I fill my time with that now. This is Tufo's a variation of it. We do a lot of things that are incredibly fulfilling. And I find fulfillment in different ways now. I'll find fulfillment in photography, in music, in writing, and doing a bunch of other stuff. But those things don't just happen all at once. You kind of create them over time. Like, you find new hobbies, you find new things to do. But yeah, people might say we're boring, but okay, what's boring? You know, like, what's boring to you? If that means all the things that is described, then we probably just wouldn't get along, because those things are really cool.
Yeah.
If you only have one trick in your bag to have fun, I would say that that's not fun. That's an addiction. Mm-hmm. Like, you have a bigger problem than just like the ability not to sit still. Like, you have an addiction. If everything you do revolves around alcohol or drugs, there is a problem. Period.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. How has your circle changed?
It's gotten, I would say it's all about quality.
Yes.
Quality people around me. Like, I still have my core group of friends that I've had since I was in elementary school. And we're still tight. I mean, we're older now. We all have kids and jobs and like our own things going on. So we're not as tight, because you just grow apart from people. But we still get together at least once a year. We still talk and text and whatnot. But the friends that I've made, in addition to them, since I've been sober, some of the best friends I've ever had in my entire life. Like, people that really, like, you bring value to their life and they bring value to yours. And I don't just mean like transactional. Like, it's not transactional. It's transformative. Like, we really pack into each other's lives. Like, talk to each other about like deep meaning in our lives. Like, we really have awesome discussions about big things, and like, you listen and they listen to you, and you make each other better. Like, those are the kind of relationships. So my circle has just changed, in that it used to just be full of like these like disposable people where they'd come and go. Like, you never really knew who they were. You never got closer than the surface. And now it's like people who really know me and I really know them.
Yeah.
And that's awesome.
I think that's great.
That's like the good shit.
Well, congratulations on 4,000 days.
4,000 days is neat. It's a cool milestone. It just sounds cooler than 11 years.
Yeah.
I don't even think I'll celebrate 11 years. I just want to say 4,000 days.
No, we celebrate a little bit. I'll well, make you like a nice Italian meal that you like. Some homemade pasta.
It's really cool. I'm just grateful. Like I say this every year. Like I'll let everyone else be proud. I'm just grateful. I'm just really grateful. That's what my sponsor told me day one. He was like, you let me be proud. You just stay grateful and you keep staying grateful and keep helping other people and you're going to be okay. Keep doing the same thing that you did day one on day 4,000 and everything's going to be okay. And I believe that. Like I used to have a fear that this was like a temporary thing. And I, at some point I would just like see through the bullshit and I wouldn't want to be sober anymore. But like my thirst and desire for sobriety is stronger than it's ever been.
That was such a Matt thing.
What?
What you just said.
What's that?
About like, I just thought this would be temporary like, and seeing that this would be BS. Like,
yeah, like I did. Like I thought that, oh, man, I hope it's just another one of those things I get into for a little while. But like you commit yourself to it every day. Like, and I've still never sworn off of drinking or using drugs forever. Like I have a hamster sized brain. It cannot handle forever. I can handle today though. And I do that every day. Like I'll get up in the morning. You know, the first thing I do before my feet ever hit the floor is I thank God for another day sober. Mm-hmm. Every single day. It's like, thank you God for another day sober. Thank you for another chance to do things right. Thank you for another chance to live your will and to do something for others. Pack into the stream of life. And then I get my day started. And anytime I get agitated or upset about something and I've done someone wrong, I make amends for those things. Like it's really freaking simple. You know, like I was taught anyway that we're never cured of this thing. All we have is a daily reprieve maintenance or contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And I believe that. And I've found that to be true in my life. And I think that you've witnessed this too. Like mm-hmm. you've witnessed me work on this thing every day.
Yeah.
In some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And it's just automatic now. And it's hard in some, sometimes it's hard for me to go back and like remember what that was like really early on, but I'll never forget it. We were in treatment and they gave us the statistics on recovery. And I was in a room with 20 guys. There was 20 of us. And they said, 1 in 20 of you will be sober in a year. 1 in 20 of you will be dead in a year. The rest of you will have relapsed. You'll be still struggling. I remember looking around the room just thinking, sucks to be the other 19 of you guys. I don't know what to say. I'm going to get this thing. I never had any doubt at any point that I would figure it out because I had seen others do it. They told me, here's the blueprint. If you just do this, everything will be fine. I'm like, well, if it worked for them, it'd work for me.
I like how you use your addictive stubbornness in your recovery. Like,
you have to.
You just switched it. You just changed it. And just I think that's
it.
Awesome.
You repurpose it. Mm-hmm. Just like we're going to get into next week with anger. Like you can mm-hmm. repurpose anger.
Yes.
If you're going to have it, you might as well make it useful.
Yeah.
It's not a flaw. It's a feature. It's a feature. It's mm-hmm. built in and you can use it for good or bad. It's your call.
Exactly.
So I was like, all right, well, I'll just get obsessed with something else then. I'll get obsessed with growth. I'll get obsessed with challenging myself mm-hmm. with, you know, forgetting everything I think I know, getting honest. Like I want to be the best at that. I want to be the best me I can be today. Like I'm not competing with anyone, just me. And I know that every day I leave something on the table where I can be better. In 4,000 days, I've yet to sit there at the end of the night. And I do this every night. I go through my day, mm-hmm. you know, was I selfish, dishonest? Afraid? Was I self-seeking? Was I thinking of myself all day? Was I actually thinking of other people? Do I owe anyone an apology? Like every single day I've screwed up at some point. Yeah. Every single day.
Welcome to being human.
Right. So I always have something to strive for. I don't think I'll ever be perfect.
No,
so,
but I'm grateful.
But I should never stop trying.
No.
You know?
Yeah. But I'm grateful that you have become the man that you promised me you'd be.
I'm happy for that too. I'm happy because you deserve every bit of it. I'm happy because our kids do. And they're the beneficiaries of it.
Like, yeah.
When I leave this planet, I want, because I'm dying first. We've already talked about this. That's our deal. I just want you to remember that about me. I want you to remember that like I took some shit and I turned it into gold mm-hmm. and I was able to, that's the lesson I want people to remember about me is that like you can redefine who you are in any given moment.
Yeah.
And the way that I was remembered at one point in my life won't be the way I'm remembered forever. That'll be a small part. You know, that'll just be the first few chapters of the book that talks about me, and the rest of it's going to be me helping other people, trying to be a better man. The work we do here at TUFO, like, that's the legacy I want to leave the world. But I have so much to be thankful for, especially you. Like, can't be understated enough. Like, man, we went through hell.
Yeah, we went through a lot of shit.
Like, listen to that, like, on the a leaf spot, like, listening to, like, that was Christmas to us. That was our Christmas, y'all. I left my wife at home because you weren't feeling well that
I
day.
I wasn't feeling well that day.
I left you at home and took our daughter to my mother's house, mm-hmm. where they were doing Christmas. Mm-hmm. Now, what kind of husband would do that? Leave you at home on Christmas when you're sick? No, what should have happened was, hey, we're not going to make it. She's not feeling well. We're just going to be here. Mm-hmm. The only reason I left the house is because I needed pills.
Because you knew that you could go run an errand. And I had known that you were, y'all have to remember, we didn't have location trackers at this time. But I know by going on time, and I knew that you would always run errands after a long, you know, did that in quotes because it was always something else. But I knew that it was taking longer than expected. And I really don't remember what happened that day. I don't remember if I asked you how long it took you. I think I found out about this later on. I don't remember out about it that day because I'm pretty sure that I asked you and questioned you like I always did. I always questioned you when you were gone for too long. And I'm sure you pulled something out of your ass and told me that, oh, well, I had to go do this or do that. And
came up with something.
Came up with something. Yeah. And, yeah. And when I hear it, it's just like, it makes it more real, that really did happen. And I know that you probably minimized it for a long time.
For sure.
And that was hard.
Yeah, for sure. You know, but that's the reason it was even able to take place, because that I had to get out of the house. You know, who leaves their wife at home alone for their daughter's first Christmas? Addicts do. That's what we do.
Yeah.
That's what we do. Without thinking too much about it, I can sell myself that story so easily. Like I've said before, like, inside of my mind is a factory. One half manufactures bullshit all day long and the other half buys it.
Yeah.
And it's just this self-perpetuating economy in my head where I'm manufacturing bullshit and I'm selling it to myself so I can sleep at night. You know, that the factory has been shut down. I'm able to call myself on my own BS now before other people have to. That's a gift.
Yeah.
That's a gift of sobriety.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like this weekend, I think was just a nice example of this is what life can look like.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
We did all the family things together. It was so enjoyable. The weather was perfect. We had so much fun, man. Wholesome, good fun.
Yeah. And I wanted to kind of share a little bit about my growth on this weekend. I went on that big old swing thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm very much scared of heights. I used to freak out if Matt was trying to encourage me to do something like that. And I was super calm. Like, I was so calm about it. And I was actually excited about it and like having fun and goofing off with all the people around me. Like, I felt myself, like my high school self. I felt like the person I felt before your addiction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I felt like somebody. I felt like me, and I went with it, and I had fun with it, and I closed my eyes, and I sang the alphabet, and I just kind of went with it, and my daughter was freaking out, and I was telling everybody, no, we have to keep going up, and I would have been like my daughter back in the day, you know, like, no, stop.
It's uncomfortable, stop now.
Yeah,
it was now you're like,
but I was like, no, I'm going to do this.
I'm going to push.
I'm going to get out of my comfort zone. And you encouraged us, obviously. You know, I loved that. But that was a big thing for me. That was a big deal for me.
It was
awesome. I was proud of myself.
I was proud of you too.
That was not a Paige thing to do.
No, I think that it's for the kids to have two healthy parents. And those are the behaviors we exhibit. I think only they can benefit from that.
Yeah.
They're going to benefit from that. They're going to see that and they're going to remember, hey, we push when things get tough. It's mm-hmm. okay. We mm-hmm. can get through it. Even if they find themselves in the situation that I was in or that you were in someday, there's a way out. there's still a happy ending for me in here. Maybe not the way I wanted in the beginning, but there's still a happy ending in here. We can push.
Yeah.
So wherever you're at today, keep pushing.
Yeah.
Push. It's okay. You're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're struggling with addiction or you're struggling with someone who's in it, push. Do the uncomfortable thing. Yeah. Do the thing you don't want to do.
Yep.
It's usually just the opposite.
Yeah.
Something I figured out early on was just do the opposite of what I think I want to do.
Oh, yeah. That's what I
help other people. It was the right answer 100% of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So this episode was all about, it was basically like an updated version of your story.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
And how we are.
Stuff you learn in 4,000 days, man.
Yeah.
It's been a beautiful journey. I wouldn't trade it for the world. I wish that other people wouldn't have had to suffer because of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, might be crazy to say, but I think that we're so much stronger for it.
I think so too.
You know,
and what we did with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
What we did with it.
Yeah.
So much stronger for what we did with it.
Yeah. So usually we don't talk about what our next episode is about, but I've already started on the next episode because I'm kind of excited about it. I think it's going to be a good one and I'll speak more on that one.
Please.
But yeah, as we mentioned before, it's about anger and we're going to just dig into that emotion and what it means for you. This is going to be for the wheelies.
That'll be a good one. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. All right, let's go. Until next time, I'm Matt.
I'm Paige.
We'll see you.
Bye.